informed you, entertained you, and hopefully made your year happier and richer as a result. This is week 3 of our Quiet Campaign, where we ask you to please give back with your donation at kpft.org. No loud requests, no demanding sales pitches, just us reminding you that your radio station could really use your support. This programming is only made possible through the contributions of people like you. Can you help? Visit kpft.org to support the programming you love. Thanks. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston. Online at kpft.org. Radio for peace.
I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
Ana sot Radio Pacifica al KPFT 90.1 FM de Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawan hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy Kissing Sea.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye prarthna kare.
Chúng tôi muốn nói lên sự thật cho giới lãnh đạo được biết. Chúng tôi là Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發, 我們是侯思俊的 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi ni Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
Hum taqat ke samne bhi sachai se bolte hain. Hum hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
من غير العدالة مش ممكن يوجد السلام.
Hello, you are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
ho, ho. Welcome to a very special Christmas edition of Technology Bites.
Are you jolly something that rhymes with Nick?
Maybe. Or junk.
Christmas. Well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Christmas.
We're joined in the studio by Carl and Suzanne, all the way in from Amsterdam, because Christmas isn't complete without your Amsterdam holiday spirits.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening. And, well, it's good to be back. I'm so happy to be here.
Welcome back, Jay.
Thank you. Dwight is out on assignment. Not for us.
I don't know if that's appropriate.
No, he had to go to Connecticut. So, somber moment there. So, what have you found? Is this something you've played before, Flicted, or is this something?
I don't remember if I've ever played this or not.
Yes, you have.
It's 8-bit Christmas,
it's
right?
Awesome. It's actually not.
No.
I mean, it sort of is, but not exactly. It's actually a recording, and I don't know, actually I may have gotten it from Barrett like a year or two ago.
Me.
I got it from you. Mm. Okay. It's Cy-Man. It's an album from 1969 or 70 called Switched on Santa. He did it all on Moog. It's all Moog or Moog, however you want to
call it. Cy, this is the Gangnam Style.
This is pre-Cy.
Pre-Cy?
Poly-Cy.
Pre-K-pop.
Okay, so but Switched on Santa, so like the same guy who did Switched on Bach?
Yeah, it's the whole like...
Hooked on
series. Hooked on classics, hooked on swing,
Hooked on Star Wars. I think that's one.
Was there?
Yes.
I never had that
stuck on
one.
Phonics.
It's got their hooks in you. All right, so welcome to the show. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. That's our website. And I have got all the podcasts up. I listened to the first few minutes of the last couple of weeks' shows while I was away. And good job, sort of.
It's hard. It's difficult without the voice.
I understand.
We have to have the voice in the studio. And
well, you know, there's a reason why they call them the anchors, I guess. Maybe. I don't know.
True.
So, but y'all guys did a good job, and thanks for covering while I was away. If you want to hang out with us on IRC, it's irc.cuckoo.com. The channel is Tech Bites. And if you have your own IRC client, you can use that, or you can go to the website and... join in that way. What's the name of my IRC client? I forget.
Use Colloquy?
Yeah, I do. There it is. Okay. All right. So you can hang out on the IRC. You can join us on the website. And a little bit later on in the show, you're welcome to dial in and tell us your Christmas stories and ask computer questions. So that phone number will be 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT in a little bit. What's so funny? What's going on in there?
Flicted broke his headphones. Flicted broke his headphones.
And then they popped out, but
then he fixed it.
Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't really break them. You just kind of temporarily...
Dislocated
your headphones. So how do we have Pete coming in? Is this Skype or is this something new?
No, it's Skype.
Oh, okay.
And maybe it'll work.
Sounds good.
I don't sound like a robot tonight.
Yeah, no, that was like... about the funniest thing. We were cracking up listening to that the next morning when we were in... We were in Germany. I just thought the whole, you know, you were right. I was waiting for somebody to say it sounds like the bit from Tron. Yes. No. They were getting some weird distortion and feedback from when he was calling in on, what was it, Google?
We did both Skype and Google Talk or Google Chat, and both of them, it was completely digitized. Like, yeah. Not even until it, not.
You couldn't even tell what he was saying. Yeah. Every time Pete would talk, it was awesome.
It was
to listen
cool.
To. Yeah. All right. So, that's all the relevant stuff. We are celebrating Christmas here on Technology Bites a week ahead of time. This is our last show, possibly our last show of all time.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. It is the end of the world on Friday, allegedly.
As witnessed by Carl's t-shirt. Yes. If it's on a t-shirt, it must be true.
Yeah, I don't think Dwight was going to Connecticut. I think he's in Machu Picchu.
Yeah, he bugged out.
He's going to the high ground.
He got a bug-out bag and he's gone.
I see.
It's me. He's prepping.
It's me.
It's me. I'm leaving.
Yeah, so possibly the last Technology Bites ever. If not, happy holidays.
Yeah, if not, we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week after Christmas.
If not.
All right, well, speaking of the end of the world, it's time to do the Technology Bites Info Shot. So, well, I just love the music you're playing tonight. But, oh, yeah, I have to remind everybody that tonight is the night that we play the song.
The song. Actually, I can give a preview of it on this album.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the same, though.
No, it's not the same. It's not the same at all.
Not even close. But it's our annual tradition of Christmas here on Technology Bites, and we apologize in advance.
Why is this a Christmas song?
Not this one. I'm talking
about... I know, I'm saying it.
This is Sound of Music, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on this... But it's on this...
Oh, I see. You're questioning...
It's Favorite Things, right? It's from Sound of Music.
Yeah.
What does it have to do with Christmas?
Brown paper packages wrapped up with string, maybe? Yeah, that's the only time I can...
toys and
nice
stuff.
Nice save. Yeah, because it's about getting stuff and liking stuff.
No, it's just about favorite things. I mean, why don't they make a version of that song, I like puppy dogs, tails, and something in rain, and you. You know that country song? I can't think of who sings it.
Tom T. Hall.
Or the Dead Milkman song, All I Want Is Sex With You. I mean, that would be a good one too, right?
Yeah, it's a very Christmas.
Different holiday. Yeah.
I mean, if you're gonna go there, you could go like to the Ramones. You know, Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight. But
I guess you could go all kinds of places if you want to just open up.
On Twitter, there's been a lot of talk about the Christmas date rape song, "Baby It's Cold Outside."
What?
If you listen to it that way, it's got a whole different tone.
Oh, I see. Oh. Horrible. All right. Don't ruin Christmas for me.
Too late.
I can't unsee these mental images. All right, so we're going to hand it over to the Technology Bites InfoShot crew in San Antonio. That crew, a crew of one, Peter Hughes. Take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bites InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, unfortunately, just me and my robot, that's the crew. No, sadly, the news gets a little bit in around holiday, because obviously there's not, like, new tech stuff, so, and there's not a lot of stuff that's particularly funny, so, yeah, it's pretty much straightforward stuff. This one's interesting. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission today updated the privacy rules related to the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, which was originally passed in 1998, which... This show was on then, and we talked about that then, except it's been so long that they had to really make a lot of brand new rules to stretch this to the new types of platforms that children are using, like social media and mobile apps. One of the interesting parts with it, and I think it makes sense, but it is interesting to note, the apps themselves have to follow certain guidelines, but app platforms like Apple's App Store and Google Play are explicitly exempted from the law. App stores are not required to verify that the apps they sell comply with the law. Instead, it's up to the individual developers to verify the compliance. The FTC also exempted plugins like Facebook's Like button and Twitter's Tweet button that are used on thousands of websites around the world. Those companies only need to comply with COPPA, that's the abbreviated version for that, if the company, quote, knows or has reason to know, unquote, that the plugin is being used on a website or app aimed at children. Earlier this month, okay, this one's funny, the FTC revealed that it was investigating kids' apps over privacy concerns with SpongeBob Diner Dash, named as one app that was singled up for investigation. You know that part where SpongeBob asks your kids to get mommy's credit card number and give it to him? No, I don't know. Just odd that there would be privacy issues with a SpongeBob app. There was a big dust up this week. Some people freaked out about Instagram's changes to its terms of service. Many people informed Facebook that they weren't pleased by the new language in the terms of service. It apparently was mistaken as a means for their photos to be monetized in unscrupulous ways. The good news is Instagram heard the complaints and has responded, explaining the changes and pledging to nix the parts that caused unnecessary confusion. they said the tweaks were meant to inform Instagrammers that the company wants to, quote, experiment with innovative advertising. And I think people took that as, we want to take all of your photos and sell them to other people and keep the money. What kind of advertising? Say a company wants more folks following its Instagram account. According to Systrom, that's Kevin Systrom, the co-founder, the changes allow Instagram to see which of the people you follow also follow that business and can use that information to better promote said company. Basically, the changes were made so Instagram can find ways to increase ad revenue without putting in banner ads. But the service still retains the right to use your information in ads. And yes, even users under 18 are included. Additionally, Systrom made clear that users own their content and Instagram will not be selling user photos to advertisers. And he's pledged that updated language to that effect is in the works. Still uneasy about using Instagram for your filtered photography needs? Well, I guess you'll have to wait and see what the final language is and if that passes muster or if you need to find something different. One thing that is cool, you know, usually there's the end of the year where it's like the year in review and there's the breathless stuff, which hasn't really happened this year. But one of the good ones, though, is the more fun one, because, you know, okay, what was the cool stuff this year? Everybody's got a few things. I mean, there were new cameras and phones and a wide variety of tablets for various needs, you know, that can be favorites for all kinds of people. But and people like them, but, you know, so what? How about the biggest tech disappointments of the year? Gizmodo had their biggest tech disappointments. Their number one tech disappointment is Microsoft Surface RT. They said Surface is a bundle of perfect, brave ideas about what a computer should be, bound together with old twine and sloppy execution. As a concept, the best of a tablet makes the best of a laptop. It's terrific. As an actual thing you can buy for $500, it's a total failure, hamstrung by a weak OS, not enough apps, and overall mediocrity. This isn't what Microsoft told us it'd be, just an awkward half step, and that's a shame. So that was amusing. Google TV, remember that? That got, like, announced big stuff, and then... Nothing, you know, Sony and Vizio both gave it a good shot, but neither of them put out a product that anybody that any of their products even got to where we spoke about them because they didn't. None of them were good enough. The one that we did talk about that's an obvious one. I'm surprised it wasn't the first one. Is of course Apple Maps. That was a real big misstep from Apple. Their not so clever effort. That one's obvious. This one is one that was sort of a surprise. Remember the Google Nexus Q when they announced it? That the black ball that was supposed to be the future of home entertainment by connecting everything to everything? It was bad enough that it was announced this year, released this year, and... canceled this year. Maybe people should have read the fine print better. The Mattel Back to the Future hoverboard. Oh, Mattel said it would hover. It doesn't hover. Yeah, if a hoverboard had been a real product that could really hover. Like in Back to the Future, that would have been one of the bigger stories on not only Technology Bytes, but any of the, all of the news places that you see, and so it. Still just a movie, just like the flying car. The Sony smartwatch. There's another one. Finally, a gadget that's on another phone or tablet. This could have been old school Sony at its new school best, a watch that hooks into Facebook, Twitter, and all sorts of other great pixelated stuff. Thinking about it was enough to spark giddiness until you tried it on and realized that it was garbage. So that didn't work so well. This one, I will say I am on the fence, and it's not from a fanboyism thing. It is more from a perception thing. The last one on Gizmodo's list for worst of 2012 is the iPad Mini's screen. And I find that the opinions on the iPad Mini screen break down between people who have used iPad 3s and were used to that and then went to look at the iPad Mini, people who didn't. And the people who had iPad 3s hated, it's all jaggy, it's I think it's kind of like when high definition television came out, and when after a while people seeing the high def picture, then it made the old screen that they used to be fine with look like garbage. So I would put a tentative against that one as to it being a failure, because they certainly are selling plenty of them, and I think that they'll sell a ton. And then next year, when I would guess they will, you know, Apple's not stupid, they will put some kind of Retina type screen in the iPad Mini, that then they'll have an even bigger hit on top of what they've already sold. I think the problem for Apple is that the perception is always that each new thing they announce is bigger and better than the last one, where the Mini was backfilling their lineup for a smaller screen and more portability. And some people's expectation was that it should be better than anything ever before. So, this one, you know, here's one that's minor improvement, but, you know, every little bit helps. Airplane Wi-Fi is about to suck less. Boeing has just developed a new calibration technology that will hopefully help make that work better. Boeing engineers initially developed the new signal test method to comply with regulatory standards, but it also will help engineers optimize your Wi-Fi signal. According to Boeing, some of the problems with Wi-Fi in a plane are that with so many bodies and objects moving around inside a metal vessel, even someone getting up to walk around in the cabin can cause a blip in your connectivity. Using new, quote, proprietary measurement analysis tools, the new calibration method helps engineers hone in the way a signal is propagated through an airplane cabin to maximize efficiency and eliminate weak signal areas inside the cabin. In addition to that story is part of how they tested it was with thousands of pounds of potatoes, because they basically sort of acted similarly to the human body as far as absorbing the signals, but they also would stand still as opposed to a couch potato, which I guess doesn't stand still enough. And then last couple of things are some media deals. You know, talk about your Retina screen. Here's one where and this one it was interesting to me, the fact of it, and it would be good to hear as time goes on and people see it, to hear what the experience is of different people on it. The Hobbit is coming out, and one of the things that's different about it, there's three ways that they are releasing this picture. There's 3D HFR, which is a high frame rate, standard 3D, and then 2D. And the thing that I've seen around with it, you know, the big thing is that the high frame rate is they shoot it at twice as many frames per second. So it's 48 frames per second instead of 24. So you don't get the same kind of motion blur. And again, it's with the big 3D, the top of the line 3D thing. But a lot of people are complaining that it makes the film look like a kind of a cheap, like foreign TV show. And that people don't get immersed in it. And so usually higher resolution and higher speed and all that stuff equals better experience. And certainly any of our listeners who are going out and seeing it, we'd love to hear your experience with it. And, you know, if there's a recommendation. The review that I saw on Gizmodo was a guy who knows his stuff, who's serious about you know, filmmaking. And he said that the 2D 24 frames per second, the normal movie one, was like a different film to him, that it was radically better. But of course there are other reviews that say that they really liked the 3D HFR. Also, some people said that the battle scenes and some of that in the high frame rate one looked like a video game. And not they weren't saying that in a good way. So it was like watching somebody else play, I guess, the Hobbit game. That's one to the real test is what do most people think? Because obviously you get the purists, they may be too stuck in the past and with the way things used to be done, to maybe accept moving forward like this. Or maybe they're right. So it'll be interesting to hear what people say. And finally, you think you got some good pictures maybe on your vacation, or you don't have the time or money to take a cool vacation to someplace else, but you want to see stunning detail. This guy, his name is David Brashears. He's a filmmaker. He's climbed Mount Everest on 5 different occasions. And visited it 15 times in his career as he works to document the effects of climate change on the mountain. But for those of us who will probably never have the chance to see Everest in real life, let alone climb up it, he created a stunning gigapixel photo. It's 2 billion pixels in this thing of the mountain and the Khumbu Glacier earlier in the year. The final composite can be panned, zoomed, and viewed on the Glacier Works website. You can Google that to find the link. It was assembled from almost 400 separate shots taken with a 300-millimeter zoom lens. It's so detailed, you can even see climbers making an ascent and one of the base camps full of tents, all from the warmth and comfort of your couch. So there's if you've got your big 4K video screen that you're using as a monitor for your computer, you can put this will be the perfect thing to stick on as your desktop background. And that's the almost Armageddon news.
I think our engineer has been dipping into the eggnog again, but possibly before he got here. I have never felt more Christmassy than I do right now.
Christmas.
All I want for Christmas is my two foxies. All right, well, welcome to the show. Now it's God knows what's going to happen. Got the Christmas music going. It doesn't really feel like a pre-Christmas show because we're so far out.
We're the farthest we could possibly be.
We're the farthest we could possibly be from between shows. And
we're kind of like Pluto. Like, we're really not a Christmas show at this point.
Are we closer to Krampus? Did you guys bring any Krampus back with you? Krampi?
Krampuses? The only Krampus thing I brought back was a poster that I snuck over in the cover of darkness and stole off the side of a post office box, which I gave to Groovehouse. He can show you. It's Lofter Anifer. It's
cool.
A particular Krampus group, or Krampuse, which is the plural of Krampus. It advertises what time and where their run is going to be and has a link to their website.
Your pictures look good. Do they actually look that scary and that kind of real in life, or was just in freeze frame photography?
No, I don't know if you watched the video that I shot, but I shot 3 videos, and in one of them, I'm walking down the Strasse, and the Krampus are coming, and they're whipping everybody in sight. And I actually made the mistake of, you know, I wanted the one to turn to the camera so I could, like, get a video of his face because he looked really good. So I growled at him, and he came for me. And in the video, if you watch it, you can hear me going, ow, ow. And then Cynthia a joke, and he says, hurts, doesn't it? I go, it does hurt. Because I got welts on my leg. And they're pretty intimidating because they're, I don't think they're walking around on stilts or anything, but some of them, those Germans and Austrians, are quite tall people anyway.
Very large.
And then the masks are hand-carved solid wood. They're heavy. I mean, when these guys go by or come near you, you sense a great presence. They're not small, and there's a lot of weight to all of that. And so, yeah.
They use real crumpus hair, or is it like synthetic these days?
I'm sure they have crumpus farms, you know, they can harvest that, you know, cruelty-free crumpus harvesting.
Covered by the EU regulations.
No doubt. What's interesting when you go to watch the crumpus is they have spotters, crumpus. Not like people go, oh, yeah, I see a crumpus. But they're like spotters that are there to make sure that the crumpus doesn't get hurt or the crumpus doesn't hurt somebody else because they can't see. Those masks, you know, they have little slits under the eyes where they're actually looking through. But those things, I can't believe, sit perfectly on their shoulders. So it's constantly, I'm sure, they're having to look around. So when I was on crumpus knock, which I did not know this, but crumpus is the word for claw. Yes, so Krampus knocked, or the Night of the Claw. And so on the Night of the Claw, I didn't know that there was... I knew it was the Night of the Claw. I knew there'd be a lot of Krampus, but apparently there was a convergence of all these different Krampus groups on the cathedral. And then they had, like, a concert stage set up, and I managed to get up... I had to wind my way through literally two or three dozen Krampus all kneeled down in the street, holding perfectly still, watching what was happening on the stage. It was very dramatic, but when you're kind of winding your way through, they can't really see you, and they know you're there, kind of, but they just hold as perfectly still as they can, and you have to, it's like climbing through barbed wire, because all these jagged horns are sticking out, and so I actually managed to get through all of them, and then got up to the stage like a concert photographer, and camped out on the edge of the stage, and as they brought them up, they would make, you know, you hear a bunch of German, and then all of a sudden, all the bells would go, and then one of the Krampus would jump up, and run up on the stage, and do some kind of crazy Krampus dance, and so I was like taking pictures like at a rock concert. It was a blast.
Claw Monic Convergence.
Here comes Krampus, here comes Krampus, yeah, 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 yeah. Here comes Krampus, here comes Krampus, yeah, 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 yeah. He will put you in a barrel, hit you with his stick.
Ow!
Hurts, doesn't it?
It does.
Snow is falling.
I heard you were talking about what... I mean, it was Peter Hughes that introduced us to Krampus in 2009. There's a link on our website to this video. If you go to geekradio.com and use the search bar to search for Krampus, you can find this video twice.
Right.
Posted on the website. But it's all Pete's fault. So that I went to Austria in search of the Krampus.
Thanks, actually, Pete.
Go ahead.
I actually saw the Krampus many, many years ago, even decades.
Really?
Yes, on the River Oaks Theater schedule, every so often they'd have the New York Erotic Film Festival. And they had a face, because when all these movie announcements have like a little logo to go with it. And that one was this black demon face. And it was actually a Krampus face.
Really?
Wow.
As a promotion for the movie or for the porn festival? Or?
Well, it was. I think they just got it off an old postcard, didn't really realize what it was.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But it was there.
So you may have seen it before anyway. Now, I was talking to a woman in Austria at a restaurant, and she said that the Krampus is actually very, very scary to them. I mean, some of the people that live in Austria, they have kind of horrible memories of their parents warning them that if they didn't behave. I mean, this is fine German upbringing, I'm sure, or Bavarian upbringing. It's like, you do not behave, the Krampus will come and get you and take you away. And then some... you know, kind of evil relative would be outside the house and scratch on the window with some branches, you know, and scare the living daylights out of them. But to make it even more Christmassy, when we went to the last Krampus event, which was on Advent Day in front of the cathedral, it was the one for the family. And so they brought out all these kids with handmade paper mache Krampus masks that they had made in middle school. You know, with their big puffy winter jackets and stuff. They didn't look terribly frightening. But they brought a Krampus out. St. Nick came, once they had everybody gathered up and the choir finished singing, the St. Nick came along with the real Krampus, like the one that had the basket on his back, big horns, switches. It was the best looking Krampus. He never got out front where I could take a picture of him. But when they did all their presentations, then they had all the kids come by And instead of sitting on Santa's knee to get your picture taken with Santa, they put you in Krampus's basket and take a picture of you, of the child. So the child's terrified being whisked away by Krampus. I would just have loved to have seen the photos for the family Christmas photos for that. It's a kid horrified in the basket of Krampus, you know, worried he's going to get carried away. So, yeah, good times. 713-526-5738. We can spend the whole night talking about Krampus, but we won't, unless somebody wants to call in and talk about Krampus. Krampus.
Krampus.
Krampus. All right, so it sounds to me like we might have a call in the queue.
That we do.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the last episode of Technology Bites ever. Merry Christmas, I mean.
Happy end of the world.
Yeah, it is the
end. We might not even make it to Christmas.
True.
No.
I'm going to hold off on doing my shopping then.
I didn't get you anything. I thought the world was coming to
you. Perfect excuse.
That's great.
All right. So let's take a call then.
All right. First up on the possibly last show pre-Christmas thing, whatever, it's going to be Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, you know, since we only got 2 days left, this may not be a relevant question. But
buy a new computer on credit. That's our answer.
Don't worry about backups.
Hello?
Sorry, we're interrupting. Go ahead.
I mean, these are really dumb kind of, you know, dinosaur questions, but I have a seven-year-old Dell desktop. And I'm on dial-up, and I've got a whole bunch of files. I've published a few books, and I keep all the Word and the PDF files on there. And everyone's telling me that I have got to get an iPad or a Kindle, and I'm totally out of touch. So I said, okay, cool. I can go anywhere you can on your little handheld device on my thing. But then I'm... my computer's so slow, I said, yeah, I need to update. So here's the question. If you have an iPad or one of those devices, is there any way to save, like, Word files on there? Or and how do you connect to a printer? Or is it just like a toy, you know? You just can go into the Internet, but you can't save files and you can't print files.
Well, you can totally save files. If you want to, you can save documents. But your best bet for that would be to use, like, an online document management. You can either store them in the cloud. You can store them on your...
But I already have them, and they're in my computer. Do I get an ISP port or something to...
No, you'd have to sync it.
What?
You'd have to sync them onto your... You could mail them to yourself. You could email the file to yourself and then check your mail on the iPad to get a hold of the document.
Okay, I did that with my publisher, actually. Right. That's a great idea.
Or you can put the document files inside of, up in the cloud, up in a cloud file server. I know that that Apple offers cloud file storage, and there's one called Dropbox where you get like 5 gig for free.
Yeah, but these are copyrighted. I'm a little worried about that, global exposure. Now, here's my other question.
Well, I wanted to answer your other question. You can print. There's a lot of there are a lot of printers out there. I just got a new printer from HP that allows you. It hooks up to my network wirelessly, and uses AirPrint. So I just brought up the printer settings on my iPad. It saw the printer, it installed a driver, and I can print no problem wirelessly.
Okay, but I mean, I'm out here in the sticks here on dial-up. Can I do that?
You'd have to have a wireless network at your house to be able to communicate with your printer. You can't connect the printer directly to the iPad.
So you have to buy a little server kind of thing.
Well, you'd have to buy a router. So you not have access to high speed internet while you're out there?
Well, I don't think so. No.
Okay. Well, you can still set up a home network if you wanted to. It just wouldn't necessarily access the internet.
Well, here's the other question, and this is the important one. Okay, I Google myself. I've got 2.5 million Google hits, and I go on various blogs and comment, and I'm wondering, you know, I notice my hits, they go up to 2.3 million, and then they go down to like 2.1, and then they go back up to 2.5. Are these real-time hits, or is there a logarithm that they say, well, if one person checks in, they make it 100, or...
Well, I find it difficult to believe that you're getting anything close to 100 million hits or anything like that.
No, no, 2 million hits.
Or even 2 million hits. And what? In what time frame?
Well, that's the question here. I mean, what makes, I always thought it was all the places that I had posted on and that there was a record and I posted on X many places. But I noticed the number, when I Google it, goes up and down and up and down.
Oh, you're talking about your search results, like when you search for your documents and you get however many Google.
Wait, I'm searching for myself. I'm Googling myself. And I have 6 books out there for sale. I'm on Amazon, I'm on Barnes & Noble, and I'm on all kinds of poetry sites. And I always thought that these sites were reflected in the numbers, but I noticed the numbers fluctuate. Does that reflect people checking in on me, and why do the numbers go away? I don't understand how these...
Well, I got that you don't understand. I understand that that's
true. Well, you do, so be kind and
If you'll give me a chance to address... So basically what you're telling me, then, you're going online and you're searching for your name and you're getting so many results when you search one time and then you're searching again and you're getting different results.
Right.
That's called vanity searching.
It's a vanity search, and I'm a vanity publisher.
But
so
if you Google yourself, you might go blind.
The numbers go up and down.
Well, that's
part of vanity search.
Now, when you chase down those links, if I go on to Google and I search for Jay Lee, I'll just do that real quick here and see how many results we get.
Have to put in not the rapper.
Right. So if I put in Jay Lee, I get 239,000 results for Jay Lee. Now, do I have 239 different web presences? 239,000 different web presences?
Almost.
Does it reflect a web presence, or are these
let me finish.
People looking up?
No, let me finish. If you want help, you'll let me finish. If I search for Jay Lee, it comes back with every time that it finds a web page that has the name Jay and the name Lee in that page. Not all of those are me. Okay?
But why does it fluctuate is the question. If your web page is permanent, it's out there, it's on the web, why does...
What you want to do, if you want to know how many times your web page is getting visited by people...
I don't have a web page. I do not have a web page.
So you only have web pages that you've gone to and commented on and left links on or spammed?
I'm on NPR radio, and I have done interviews with other places, and I'm pretty well known in the country, and people look me up because I make comments.
But when you do searches, when you do a search on the web, all it's going to do is come back and tell you how many times it found those words that you searched for.
How often do you do these searches?
I'm putting in my own name.
I understand.
And on Tuesday, I have 2 million hits, and on Thursday, I have 2.5 million hits, and then on Friday, I have 2.25. Why do the numbers fluctuate?
The search result is giving that, but the web's a living thing, so there are all kinds of sites pop up and go down. News items come out that change the overall numbers, and also Google changes the way that they do page rankings a lot, too. So as those algorithms change, the number of results that come back will change, but you're just a little raindrop in the huge, huge ocean that are, what's coming back for your name on those results. Probably just, hundreds might be yours, maybe even thousands, but that's about it. The rest of them have no relation to you.
Now, one of the other things that will happen, and I hope you'll let me finish this before interrupting me, but one of the things that will happen is let's just say that you have, let's just say NPR says that semi-famous author from Houston, Texas, who's pretty much in love with himself.
Very famous, and I hate myself, but carry on.
So semi-famous self-loathing author has been mentioned on NPR. So NPR has this story about Bob. Let's just call this guy Bob. So Bob Smith has been mentioned on NPR. Now, what can happen is there are a number of websites out there in the internet that will take content from other websites and publish it on their own. So, I write for the Houston Chronicle. If I do a search for Jay Lee, Houston Chronicle, I'll find all of my entries that I've ever made on the Chronicle website. Plus, I will find other websites that have taken the content from the Chronicle and copied it lock, stock, and barrel to their own website. So I may have, let's say I have 100 articles on cron.com, but I do a search and it'll come back with 1,000 articles by Jay Lee. But that's because other websites have taken that data from those websites and copied it. And there are a lot of websites that do that because they're trying to draw traffic to themselves.
Exactly, but why do the numbers go down?
Because different sites, because as Barrett said, the way that Google responds to how it's, you know, the search query and what it determines to be a valid result for that search query fluctuates. Well, if you want to know more about what those are, you need to start chasing those links down. Click the link.
They're continually searching. They're continually dropping old data as sites go offline, or they change their algorithm, and right. So the numbers are going
to
change.
You're telling me this is Google. It has nothing to do with people doing the search.
No, it has exactly. Nothing to do with people doing the search. Now rankings of which results will come up and how they rank do have something to do with how people are doing the searches.
If people tend to do a search and they click on a certain page, it will become more important as a search result.
If you go to Google and actually search for Google Basics, the page that's called Google Basics will pull up, and it'll tell you how they discover, crawl, and serve web pages and find all that stuff. So it'll kind of break it down for you so you can get your head around it.
But you're not going to be able to use Google to determine how many people are interested in what you're writing.
But there's more to it, because I noticed that the list, I have like 20-some-odd pages when you go to Google, and then you can
Is your name common? Is your name like, are you the only person in the world with your name?
Yes, I am. I actually did that for copyright reasons.
So you picked a name that is completely unique. You're the only person with that name whatsoever.
That is correct. When you're avoiding the question.
No, I'm not avoiding the question. You're not answering mine. What I'm trying to narrow this down for you. You tell me you're asking for help, but then you don't let me help you. So we're not going to play that game. So the end of the world just came for you. Your long calendar expired.
Don't call us back and let us know how it is.
Yeah.
We want to find out for
ourselves. We want to find out for ourselves when the world comes to it.
I'm curious about this globally unique name, though. That's kind of interesting.
I didn't want to give him the opportunity to promote himself at that point.
I like how he doesn't get that the results are not hits.
Right.
His stuff. I mean, it's just results from out of the
way. And I would be curious to know. I mean, they have a lot of questions for him. Unfortunately, he was never going to let me ask them, so we had to let him go. But one of the things when you're doing a Google search is if your name is truly unique. Now, if you made up your first name as a unique word and your last name is a unique word, then you wouldn't have to put that in quotes, for example. But if you picked a name that's something clever, but there are two names that maybe belong to other people, and you put those two words together in Google, you're going to get results for every time either of those words show up.
Or if you made it uncommon by misspelling it by one letter,
Google has
gotten intelligent enough now that it will correct what you put in.
Right. So what I would want to know, go ahead, you got some, Carl?
Well, maybe he changed his name to an IPv6 address.
Third humor. Yes. Well, you know, I mean, if you go online, like I go online, if I search for Jay Lee, it'll come up with any web page that has the mention of Jay and Lee in it. And it may not be a Jay Lee together. It might be Jay Smith and Lee Davis. But so you have to fine-tune your searches. You have to put Jay Lee in quotes. And then you have to put qualifiers on there that help narrow down the search results. Even if you have the most unique name in the world, if the components of your name are actual names or words in the dictionary, then Google's going to return all of that. And like Barrett said, it is a constantly fluctuating thing. So with all these scraper sites that are out there that are collecting data, they come up and go down all the time. But I would doubt that there are 2 million references to this one particular person out there on the web. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm thinking not. I'm thinking that he needs to fine-tune the way that he's searching for himself and have a little bit of understanding. What was the site you were talking about?
Oh, just Google Basics. It's actually hosted by Google, but if you search for that, it kind of breaks down how the search engine works and what you're actually looking at, you know.
I am happy that Google's giving me as the number one Jay Lee now. It used to be the guy from IMDb,
Oh, yeah, that was the number two hit with something about zombies and people to take their clothes off.
Zombie strippers, yeah. The director of the movie Zombie Trippers had the number one Jay Lee spot. And I think Google actually fine-tunes it for local now. It actually knows it's me. So, there might be somebody else out there with your name. You might want to look into that. You might have a copyright claim.
That's what they're saying. The big push now is that instead of just searching the web, they're actually searching your correspondence, you know, your Google text, your email, you know, things you've searched for and stuff like that to try and find extra relevancy, which is kind of cool, but it's also kind of, you know, just a tinge creepy.
And there's a way that you can turn that off, too, inside of Google, and I don't remember what it is, but you can go into Google and tell it not to return certain kinds of searches. But I did a search for Jay Lee, and there's 1,460,000 results for that. And I know there's not 1,460,000 unique sites talking about me, unless I just privately want to believe
you were gone for a couple weeks.
I did post a lot of pictures, so maybe. And a lot of times, you know, it, like another thing that'll happen is that, you know, say you have a website. Let's just use NPR for an example. So NPR has a website, and they have a front page story about you. What'll happen is that that text will have your name in it. But then that story will go off the front page and go into the sidebars, so previous stories. So NPR might have 5 different search results return on a Google search, but it's all that one same article. But it shows up as 5 different because your name kind of shows up in the banner or in the byline or in the sideline of these other pages. So you have to go and look at those links and see what they actually are to determine if they're really a unique thing about yourself. It's one of the advantages of hosting your own website. If you want to know more about what people are interested in terms of what you're doing, publish your own webpage for your books. Publish an author site and then put some analytics in there that will measure how many people are searching for you by name, and then you'll have that information about yourself. And you
or can, just lazy and he wants lots of results, name your next
I'm sorry, name your next what?
Name your next book porn. And then you can look up references to it, and the numbers will fluctuate, and they'll be huge.
Yes.
No pun intended.
Now it is. yeah?
Now we're going to have to start Google searching to see if we can find an angry poet waxing, you know, poetical about how horrible Technology Bites is.
I can't wait to hear the hate poem. Is his name is Gary? Is that? Did you get that?
Yeah.
Gary, do we have a last name on Gary?
Negative.
Well, Gary's a very uncommon name.
His name is Gary Negative?
Gary? Maybe he has a pen name.
Could be.
But if his name's Gary and he puts Gary into Google, I mean, you don't get to claim the Indiana results, I'm telling you. Gary the poet?
Does that come up?
Gary, Indiana.
No, pop artist, 1960s.
Really?
Gary, Indiana.
I wonder if he's Gary Feet.
That's not uncommon.
No. There's a poetry by Gary, and I can't say the name of the poetry because it's the N-word twice. I'm not sure if that. And then there's poet Gary Snyder. That poem hunter. Wow. All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air. And I wouldn't worry about it because unless your poetry's about the end of the world, nobody's really interested in it right now anyway. 713-526-5738. I hate looking at this screen and seeing a blank screen. I know there's no calls because there's no calls.
It's like staring into the end of the world. The screen's gone first.
The abyss.
It's a short preview.
It's blackness.
What is this song I'm listening to now? It doesn't sound like Christmas either.
It's Tijuana Christmas.
Tijuana Christmas. Yes, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us tonight, we are taking your calls. Groovehouse is currently screening a call now. So we should have someone here. Is it him again? Did he call back? You can hang up on him. 713-526-5738 is the number to call to be on the air. Flick is just laughing and laughing right now. It's him?
He's back.
Well, you know, that's not good for us because Groovehouse is going to have to.
It's okay. Groovehouse is going to explain it appropriately.
Get his full IPv6 address. I'm curious. We got to find out who this guy is.
By calling in and taking up Greenhouse's time, we're going to miss out on valuable potential other calls, although we're coming up on the top of the hour. 713-526-5738. You may not get three right away because Greenhouse is not being allowed off the phone.
I don't see anything else ringing. I think these kind of flash when
they
would.
Else comes
in.
Yeah.
So there's some open lines. You
can
give them a call.
I was optimistic. I was hopeful. So it's the pre-Christmas, pre-Armageddon episode of Technology Bites, and we invite you to call in and be a part of the show tonight. I know that people are busy and getting ready for the holidays and visiting friends and traveling around, but oh Lord, do I have to go in there and just pull the phone off of his ear? What?
And busy getting ready for the end of the world. If you have any doomsday preppers tips, computer wise.
Well, like Barrett said,
turn off your backups, download everything, click away.
Just toss your UPS, plug directly into the socket. What have you got to lose? That's going to be the first thing at the end.
Go visit 4chan.
Don't go to start shutdown. Just hit the button and power the butt thing.
Do not remove safely any of your USB devices. Don't unmount. All right, I got to hear from Groovehouse on what that was about, so. Hey!
I had my own conversation with Gary.
So, yeah?
Yeah, I think he gets it now. He understands that pages go up and down, web crawlers get information here and there. So, you know, it may not be there the next time. He understands now.
Well, good. I hate for our world-famous poet friend to have anything less than accurate information. Okay. All right, 713-526-573, although we're coming up on the top of the hour, and so whoever calls in, we can either have to speed round them, or we'll just have to put them on hold and bring them up to the top. Do you have a Barrett time tonight?
I will give my Barrett time to the caller. No, I don't, unfortunately. I was going to write it here, but there was a lot going on in the studio. You're back after 2 weeks, and Carl was here, and Flicked came in with stuff.
Came in with stuff.
Christmas stuff.
Holiday spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was going to do it, but I just now, thanks to two-factor authentication, just now broke into my Google account from a new machine. Like, I've got it to where it resets itself every 30 days, and apparently that's on the 19th. Do you not do that? To where when you log in from a new machine, the two-factor thing, it'll send a text to your cell phone or however you want to get it, and you actually have to look at the phone, type that number back in, and only then will it allow you to log in from that resource. So if someone got your password, it wouldn't do them any good. They'd have to get your password and your cell phone. Which is still kind of highly likely in my situation.
we've heard the voices of the masses now.
We have?
What did they say?
They want the song.
Uh-huh.
Two calls to see if the song was to be played, and I asked, do you want to hear the song? And they both said yes.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to wind this down, and we're going to do our station break business. And then since we don't have Barrett time, we're going to give you Krampus time instead, which will be in the form of the traditional song that Technology Bites brings to you. This is something that Flicted found, so blame him when you hear it. But we'll be doing that here just after we do this short break. So Groovehouse is in the process of hopefully fielding a call or at least telling somebody that we will be playing the song. But you need to stick around for the song. The song is... it's what we live for here every Christmas season on Technology Bites. It's the song. So we're going to get out of here and do our station business. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
It is.
Conflicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after this.
KPFT is supported in part by Houston's Art Alliance and PowerToGive.org, Houston's funding platform for local artists' organizations. PowerToGive.org empowers donors to give directly to local arts and cultural projects that inspire them. Nonprofit organizations post projects that are in need of funding. The community helps bring them to life with gifts. PowerToGive.org gift cards make it easy to share the gift of giving while supporting Houston's arts. You're listening to KPFT Houston. KPFT is supported in part by Houston's Art Alliance and PowerToGive.org, Houston's funding platform for local artists' organizations. PowerToGive.org empowers donors to give directly to local arts and cultural projects that inspire them. Nonprofit organizations post projects that are in need of funding. The community helps bring them to life with gifts. PowerToGive.org gift cards make it easy to share the gift of giving while supporting Houston's arts. You're listening to KPFT Houston.
Gentlemen, this is the only tradition that we believe in here on Technology Bites is playing this song every year. All right, we're on the air now, Suzanne. We're researching our poet friend too. So, all right, this is the annual tradition. This is the song we play every year on the Technology Bites episode before Christmas Day, because either we're going to make your Christmas or break it. It's up to you how you respond, but also we have no Barrett time, so take it with a grain of salt. All right, so let's do...
Our gift to you.
Our gift to you. You're welcome. From Technology Bites.
They shine. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pine till he appeared. And the soul felt its worth, a thrill of hope. The weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
Divine.
that's poetry.
My year is complete.
I think I pulled something. Just trying to sing along in my head.
Now, I was searching for our... Well, I needed something to distract me, but while the song was playing, I was searching for our poet using his name in quotes and then the word poet. And the number of search results is 79,800 results. Most of which seem to come from, like, scariot.wordpress.com, a number of blogs where he's mentioned over and over and over again. But, yeah, he's pretty prolific. Good for him. All right. I feel better after hearing the song, though.
Me too.
By virtue of us searching for him, it will affect his results.
Exactly.
A lot of WordPress blogs. These poets, man. All right, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking your calls and willing to answer your questions and tell you how many times you show up in Google if we have to. So
I want to hear that song on the 21st.
That could actually bring about to the end of the world. That may be one of the signs of
getting out there. So then they're going to say, this is what we heard shortly before the whole place went boom.
Chances are, because radio waves continue on into perpetuity out into space, we may have actually invited the end of the world the first time we played it.
Very true.
And it's taken a couple of years to get
the out. Cosmic meteor was launched and got here as quick as it could. It's coming from that blue marble. Take it out.
Shame it wasn't on the Voyager Golden Record.
Oh. Put it on the universe.
Only 50, 60 years too late.
Or so we think.
So.
All right. So it looks like Groovehouse is actually screening a call. So that's good. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we are inviting your calls to, is it him again? Can we not shake this guy? Groovehouse is too nice to be on the phone. He's filled with the holiday spirit.
We do have another call coming in this time.
Let's go ahead and jump to that call. And, Technology Bites, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, what was that? Was that a song that you guys were playing?
It's been loosely referred to as a song, yes.
Okay, what's the name of it? How can I find it?
It's called
Holy Night.
Oh Holy Night, which is a famous Christmas song. And it's the worst version of Oh Holy Night you'll ever hear.
And where can I find it?
Actually, if you Google for Oh Holy Night, worst version ever, this mixtape will pop up, and it's a YouTube video, too.
Yeah, there's several YouTube videos of it out there. If you do Oh Holy Night Worst, WORST, you'll find it.
All right, sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. Bye-bye. There's one that's actually called Oh Holy Night Worst Rendition Ever, End of Days Edition for YouTube. Let's see what the... I wonder if they've changed it. I wonder if anybody modded the song. That would be awesome. It's the same one. Oh, but they've got it set
related to Arnold Schwarzenegger, End of Days.
End of Days. Oh, that's awesome. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger walking around a church with a big gun. Yep. All right. That song just continues to get better and better and better. All right, there's another call. Let's take that call. KPFT, Technology Bites, you're on the air.
Hello, sir. My name is Peter. And I'm an older guy, but anyway, I've never had a Facebook.
Okay.
Okay, now here I get an email that your Facebook has been blocked due to suspicious activity, punch-in comments. Hook up to this number, and here's the number. Is this some kind of gimmick?
That's a scam.
It is a scam.
Yeah, they've got your email. They assume you have a Facebook so they can trick you into contacting them and paying them money to solve a problem that you don't actually have.
Okay. That's what I kind of thought.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with a Kindle file I got for one of my grandkids. And they asked for my email address. Would that have anything to do with it?
If they set up a Facebook under your name, if they used your email address and created a Facebook account with it, maybe.
But the kids got their own.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it had anything to do with that.
Most likely, I just should click on it, right?
No, I wouldn't click on it, no.
Okay, that's the only thing I wanted to know.
Okay.
Have a Merry Christmas. The song was beautiful.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. This claims to be the worst Christmas song of all time.
No, it's only got 761 views, too, so it has not yet gone
as bad
nor may it ever.
The one from what?
The video's pretty horrible. I will give it that. The video's awful. All right, Groove House, what's going on now?
Nothing. We got another call on the line.
Do we?
Yes, we do.
All right. Let's take that call.
All right.
Put them on the air.
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to speak with Keith.
Keith, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Good. I reinstalled a motherboard last week on my desktop, and I've lost four USB devices after the installation. A mouse, two thumb drives, and an external drive. They've all stopped working. I have power to some of the USB. I've got a keyboard and mouse that continue working. When I plug them in, it says USB not recognized, that kind of thing. But some of them are older, some of them are newer, so I just I don't know what's going on.
Have you taken these devices and hooked them up to another computer to see if they'd work on that computer?
I have, okay. And no luck there.
And they're dead. Huh.
I have one mouse that's like an optical mouse that's got a light on the bottom of it,
uh-huh.
And it still will light up. But the computer won't recognize it. It doesn't work. Actually, I've hooked it up, to four different machines, and now it still lights up, but it doesn't do anything.
So now you don't see the thing where it's installing drivers or doing any of that to set up the mouse. Normally when you plug a USB device into a computer that hasn't seen that USB device before, it has to go through that little rigmarole where it installs the driver and sets it up.
Sure. Yeah. I did tons of searches on Google and stuff, and I tried unplugging, powering everything down. Unplugging everything so that the motherboard powers down, plugging it back in. I did the everything.
Well, I mean, if you're telling me that you've got, if you're telling me you plugged the device into your computer that you replaced the motherboard on,
uh-huh.
And it stopped working, and you took that device and you plugged it into another computer and it wouldn't work there either,
uh-huh.
Then the problem is partially with your computer. I mean, it sounds to me like what you're describing tells me that your computer with the replaced motherboard damaged the USB device.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's what it sounds like if you're telling me everything. Because I asked you, I was trying to ask you earlier and you didn't really answer the question. You told me that you knew, but I want to make sure, if you take a mouse and you plug it into a computer, into the USB, and that computer has never seen that mouse before,
correct.
It takes it a few minutes to install it, automatically detect it, and set up the drivers before it will work.
Right.
Do you see that happening on not the bad computer, but on the test computer?
Not anymore.
So you plug this device into a computer that's never seen it before, and it doesn't go through any driver installation or anything. It's like it doesn't see the device at all.
Correct.
All right. It sounds to me like the device is damaged. That being said, I've never heard of this happening before.
Right.
I've never heard of a computer that kills USB devices.
Right.
So I would suspect that it's probably, possessed by demons.
That was one of the answers that could be possible, yes.
Well,
Is this on one of the USB ports that actually is connected to the main board, or is this like one of the expansion ones that runs back to the main board with wires?
It's one of the ones in the back. I didn't quite hear all of it.
Is the USB that you're connecting the device to on the computer with the replaced motherboard, is the USB built into the motherboard?
Is it directly on the motherboard?
Or is it an expansion card?
Correct. Yes, it is. It is. And I plugged another device in there, another mouse in there, and it worked. It recognized. And so that part of it's working. The thing is, during that time, that 24-hour period when I replaced the motherboard, I lost two thumb drives and I lost a USB drive now that doesn't work.
Did you actually hook the motherboard up to the power supply, or did you just take, like, a power cord and take the raw end of it and just stick it onto the motherboard? Because that could definitely cause some problems.
I haven't got a new power supply and stuff. I mean, everything's pretty up to date.
Right, so when you said like the USB is built into the motherboard, or is it an expansion card?
It's built into the motherboard.
Okay, you had mentioned, is it powered? I guess it's powered USB,
it's
then?
5 volts.
Yeah. And so when you hook the power supply up to the motherboard, I mean, you did it with the proper connectors. You didn't hotwire it or anything.
No, the ground. I mean, I looked on the schematics, and the ground is connected and everything. I thought about that. It might be a ground problem where it's, pushing too much, and shorting out my devices, my USB devices that aren't powered. I checked that. And that's, connected properly. I've got a little, it's an Intel motherboard, and it's got a little, some software with it that kind of tells me, how everything's running, 12 volts, 5 volts, all of that. And on that software, everything says that it's okay, so I mean, I don't, all the voltage of that side, I don't know that much about it, but that side of it said that everything's working fine.
I've never heard of this happening before.
Did you just happen to recently also purchase a Tesla coil, which you put in the room near the computer?
Now, when you replaced the system board, was this just an upgrade that you decided to do, or was it the result of a problem before?
The motherboard died. Yeah, it was a problem before, so it needed to be,
And you've replaced, but is this a new power supply as well?
I happened to upgrade the power supply and kept the memory and the CPU and, kept those, but, replaced the motherboard. I mean, it's an Intel, it's a, good name brand. I mean, what I'm worried about, I guess, a pull apart of the question, too, would be, I've got some other devices that are kind of high-end that I don't want to plug in a tablet or something into it and have it short out or it die, or whatever's going on. The $10 thumb drives, I'm not too worried.
Right, I understand.
About.
You don't want to plug in a nice external, terabyte hard drive or something like that.
Definitely don't plug anything else into it. I was going to joke around and say don't plug anything else into it, but really don't. Like, if you've lost three or four devices so far, don't put anything nicer than, $10.
Did you buy the motherboard from a reputable dealer, or is it secondhand, or what?
It was new. I got it from online. I can't remember the name of it now, but they're kind of a bulk seller or whatever. It was in New York. I mean, it seemed reputable. I linked to it from off of Amazon. So,
I'm just wondering if it has any warranty or technical support where you can call the people that make the board and say, hey, this is my experience. What's happening when I'm using your motherboard is that it's killing my USB devices.
Right. I don't know. I didn't think about that. I can look into it and see.
If I had to guess, it sounds to me like there is something in the USB connectivity that's either delivering too much power to the USB port that is shorting out the device. But like I said, I've never seen this happen before. I don't know how that would happen exactly, but what it sounds like is there's too much power to the powered USB, and it's zapping or zorching some devices. Some devices may be able to handle the extra amount of current, but other devices may not.
Did these things work for a while and then
stop?
And then stopped, or did they, as soon as you plugged them in, they weren't working, and then you put them in something else and they still weren't working?
Well, it kind of all happened in a 24-hour period. Because I made sure I installed all my drivers and everything for the new motherboard, got all the update drivers, did everything. And
I mean, I had a broken desktop, so kind of the last thing on my mind was my, you know, my thumb drives. I was just wanting to get my thing powered back up, so I really wasn't paying that much attention to it. You know, I plugged it in, it's like, oh, well, the USB devices didn't find, you know, I'll just mess with it later or whatever. And then I went back and plugged it into my laptop and stuff to transfer some data and get some stuff on my new computer. And then I noticed that it wouldn't recognize it, wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't find them. Some of them do, you know, it'll say device not recognized. And then like this, the Kingston 16 gig USB that I've got, I mean, it's 2 weeks old. And it doesn't do anything. Like when I plug it in, I mean, it doesn't do anything. I've got a Patriot 16 gig USB that's about 8 months old, and it'll keep saying device not found. So I uninstalled the drivers under the device manager and reinstalled them. And of course, for these, you know, there's not any like drivers to go to the website to install, but it's just Windows isn't finding them. And I even tried mounting under Linux. And, you know, just to see if it was maybe an operating system problem. And, you know, it's just
they're dead. You
know, yeah, they're dead.
Do you have access to a powered USB hub?
I'm sorry?
Do you have access to a powered USB hub?
I do not.
Those are pretty cheap. I mean, that would be the only thing I would trust, putting in between, you know, like a high-end device and the machine, because it would probably just zap the USB hub. And if you get one that's powered that plugs into the wall, it's going to have protection circuits in there that should protect the other devices. Sometimes on finicky devices, if you go through the USB hub, because that powers the other devices independently, you might have a little bit more luck. But it still doesn't really solve the root problem of, you know, why that's happening in the first place with the main board.
Right, yeah, because it is my main system, and you know, I use it the most. So,
and you're sure that the USB ports are built into the motherboard, or are they connected via wires to the motherboard? Are they integrated, or do they actually kind of connect via a wire?
Well, the one where like my mouse and keyboard, I mean, they're in the back with the same with the HD plug and the HDMI plug that are, you know, connected on the panel that sticks out of the back of the motherboard that is actually attached to the motherboard. Yeah, I mean, I've got those. I mean, I've tried the front ones.
But what I'm trying to isolate is when you plugged the device in and it died or got killed, was it plugged into the integrated USB or was it plugged into maybe one of the extension USBs?
Then I'd have to go back to, I was, you know, in a hurry doing a bunch of stuff, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So
the reason I'm asking that question is that sometimes those wires are not connected properly.
Right.
The thing is,
the ones on the back, you couldn't really wire them incorrectly because they're soldered onto the board. But the ones that are like on an external card or an external piece that you plug into the motherboard or on the front of the case that you plug into the motherboard, if you flip those around, it's possible. I don't actually know the pinouts on USB, but it's possible if you flip those around, what was ground is now 5 volt. Or I mean, you're sending the wrong power and stuff down the wrong line, and it could mess stuff up.
I accidentally plugged in like a USB, one of the expansion USB cables, into something that was not 5 volts, and it caught fire just very, very quickly. It heated up, and the you know, the insulation on the wire actually started smoking. So you can do that. Yeah.
As you're building this computer, are connecting USB to power on the motherboard yourself, you need to double check what you've done.
Okay.
Make sure that you put ground on the right pin and not flipped around.
Yeah, you may have to get the manual to the main board and actually get it out and study the pinouts and make sure that you're connecting the right thing. Absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, make sure you're connecting the right thing to the right set of jumpers and you've got the polarity right.
Because if you are, because it sounds to me like the only way this might have happened is if you were using the extension USB and they weren't wired properly and they shorted out the devices that were connected to it. It's unfortunate that we don't know that for sure, but if we knew if you had a device that went bad on the built-in USB, then you have a bigger problem. But if you have a shorted out device that's connected to a USB you wired yourself when you built the computer, then it's something you did.
In this case, you want to hope that you made a mistake, because that's the better of the two scenarios.
Right.
Absolutely. Okay, guys. Well, thank you very much for the input.
All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I posted a picture of the Crown Royal maple, and people really like that picture. Somebody said, ooh, what's it taste like? I said, it tastes like burning pancakes.
Pancakes.
Pancakes. 713-526-5738.
I would say it smells good.
It smells great. It smells like breakfast.
I don't really like Crown, so.
Tastes like burning. All right. Groovehouse, do we have anybody in the queue?
We do not.
Oh, wow. Uh-oh.
Open line.
It's like a real pre-Christmas show, though. It feels like nobody's tuned in.
I really like the ending of that song. Like, that's one of my favorite parts of Overnight.
Where he takes a breath?
Where he takes a breath. That's one of my favorite parts. And the thing is, so when I'm playing it, I'm actually manipulating the volume so that when it gets near the end, because the song's fading out, and I actually, like, intentionally pan it up so you can hear it more clearly. Because I love the fact that, I mean, it's great that it sucks you in, because you think at first, like, yeah, this guy's okay. And then it gets a little worse, it gets a little worse, it gets a little worse, and it just... okay, this is bad, and then it keeps getting worse, and you think again, and then it gets worse, but then just the way he finishes it out, where he's just like, you know, just holding that note, and then he pauses to take a breath to continue the note. It's brilliant.
I saw Afflicted mouthing the words during it. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I like that part too. The second year we played it, my friend Jim, who's a musician, was listening. And he made the comment, he said that the person who recorded that must really understand music, because he made every mistake in there was textbook. Like, you have to be a trained musician to do that on purpose, and it could only have been done on purpose.
It's like jazz, only worse.
That was great. There was what's that? Parks and Recreation show, Leslie Knope's getting interviewed on the NPR radio, and she announces the next segment, which is jazz plus jazz equals jazz. And, and so what this radio show does on NPR is plays one jazz song on one turntable and another jazz song on the other at the same time. It says, we've come to the conclusion that our listeners really like jazz. So if you take jazz plus jazz, it equals jazz.
You know, when I was on, when I did college radio, that was one of the things I liked to do, because It was actually cable radio, so almost nobody was listening. So I would just get stupid and start to play records backwards for no reason and stop them and bounce the needle. But one of my favorite things was to take like a noise industrial piece and then play that, and at the same time play like an old big band piece. So it's like some like just noise grind industrial and big band. I would do that fairly often.
I think I may have found a version of that song sung by the guy who originally sung it. But again,
Nashville, Tennessee, I am the original O Holy Night singer. Yes, the version that you have heard on the radio, and the version that you have seen 30 different people claiming to be the original singer on YouTube, I am the original singer of O Holy Night. Now, I'm not only going to say that tonight, but I'm going to re-sing the song, not lip-sync. You will know I'm not lip-syncing. And I'm also going to offer you proof that I am that singer. The song was originally recorded in the early 90s, 1990. I produced a project for the Christ Church Choir. The project was called Sing Noel, and Guy Penrod of Gaither Vocal Band fame sang the solo on this particular song. Here is the computer-generated version of the score. The original score was in hand. Here's the original score that I wrote for the orchestra. And here is the famous fall on your knees portion. And you can see at the very top is the big French horn gliss, big rip from the French horns right before the powerful fall on your knees. Now, on the original version, Guy Penrod did not sing the fall on your knees, but Christ Church Choir sang Fall on Your Knees, and Guy did the backups. I had to take the choir off on my version because I was planning to sing the melody. This is the original producer's copy of that night. And I went in, and now that's been 20 years ago and about 40 pounds ago. So I have not sang it since that night, so I don't know if I can or not. But before I sing, I want to give you further proof
that I am indeed who I claim to be, the original O Holy Night singer. Now, here is the original track off of that quarter-inch Ampex 256 tape that I just held up. This is the track with no vocals whatsoever. Here's the bridge run rip. It's a good track. You can actually purchase this track at iTunes. sing along with it, make it funny.
Ooh, we can sing it next year
if you want. It's available. No vocals. Now, here is the original version as was released to the market on Star Song Records with Guy Penrod singing. You notice the choir is singing the melody and Guy is singing ad-lib parts around it. Guy goes up to a really high B flat. That's the highest note he sings. And later he gets up to a B flat, okay? That is the original. That was the commercially released recording that I produced for Christ Church Choir. And then, of course, we have the infamous version at that very same spot, so you can hear it's all the same. But you can hear the identical orchestrations. The track is exactly the same. Now, there's no way that I could have manufactured those that close. Someone online talked about this being a cheesy track to start with. Well, it really wasn't a cheesy track in 1990. It sounded like the 80s and 90s, and that whole era was cheesy, so therefore the track. But you will notice that the version that I'm going to sing to in a minute is better than the version that's been around forever on the internet because it doesn't have all the phasing and stuff. It came directly off of this original tape. So I am now going to attempt to sing O Holy Night, and I will at times actually stop and say something so that you'll know I'm not lip syncing. I'm not going to try to match the original phrasing. I'm just going to try to get in the mood that I was that particular night and see if Paul and Trey Corley here at Oak Tree Studio can convince you that I am the real deal. Holy night, the stars are bright and shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. See, I'm singing. Long may the world in sin and error pine. And our soul felt its worth. The thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks the new and glorious morn.
I have to say that is him. He's not quite getting the high note.
Good, can't hit the high note anymore.
He can't not hit it the way he used to not hit it. Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, night, dear bride, here's the moment you wait.
Wow, he's ripping his vocal cords.
All right.
And that, kids, is the story of Christmas.
Oh, night divine.
And Flickman had to hear his favorite part. Oh, I'm glad that guy came out from retirement and proved that he was the rightful.
I have to watch that. I haven't seen that.
It's Oh Holy Night, original singer Steve Maudlin.mpeg. MPG, but yeah, it's on YouTube.
Doesn't that make you want to become famous enough that you could have a Christmas special that was straight for all of it, except at the very end, you bring him out and have him sing it?
Yeah, so if he could be introduced by somebody like Lawrence Welk, and now on our Christmas special, singer Steve Maudlin. Yeah, all right, 713-526-57. I wonder what that does to dogs.
I don't think it's high enough.
Well, you know,
they might cock their head to the side a little bit, but
I mean, some dogs will just start howling whenever you sing, even if you sing well.
He was definitely hitting some dog sounding notes.
I wonder what it would do to Dooley.
Dooley probably love it.
It's like the DVD extra of the song.
Could you take that year round though, if you were to actually pick up on some of the phrases? Could you live with that?
I don't know. It might be a bit much. Yeah. He sings Jingle Bells at the wrong time of year sometimes, and that bothers me.
Dooley is Jay's bird.
My parrot. Yes. So, Groovehouse, do we have anybody in the queue?
We do have someone in the queue.
Awesome. We can actually talk about computers.
Yes, let's do that.
All right.
So, all right.
Who is it?
It's going to be Chris.
And what do they want?
They
want
to talk about a used Mac.
All right. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I am relatively new to the Mac world. I am pretty savvy with PCs and Linux,
mm-hmm.
but I've never, until this week, never actually bought a Mac operating system before. So I bought a used Mac Mini, and it did not come with installation discs or restore discs or anything like that.
Okay.
It works, and it has some pre-existing software. It looks like it's just been recently wiped and then has the operating system put back on, and that's the way I received it. I'm just wondering what I should be concerned with. One, is it usable? Should I be really worried about having pre-existing spyware or phone home or something like that? Or,
well, first of all, if you're someone who's fairly savvy with Windows and computers in general, mm-hmm. I'm curious as to what prompted you to buy a secondhand Mac Mini. Was it just a good deal?
It was a really good deal.
All right. When it comes to a secondhand computer of any kind, my recommendation is to, hopefully, if you buy a secondhand computer, you get the install discs. If you don't have the install discs, you're kind of in a world of hurt if you do need to reload the software.
How mm-hmm. old is the Mac Mini? What year model is it? Do you know?
It's the one where you can only go up to Snow Leopard.
Yeah, just up to 10.
I think it's 2009.
Okay. So, yeah, I was going to say if it was a more recent one, you could they went to selling the media online, and so like Lion and Mountain Lion, they didn't even sell DVD media.
Right, I could just buy it, download.
You could just buy it off the Apple Store.
Myself, right?
I think Snow Leopard might be available on the Apple Store though, so you might actually be able to buy a copy of Snow Leopard on the Apple Store. And there's a trick you can use if you want to burn physical media. You can download it. You have to buy it, but download it from the Apple Store. Once you download it, instead of running to install it, don't install it. Open up the image that, or open up the package that downloaded, and you can find the DMG, and then you can burn that as a ISO image, as a disk image to a DVD, and then you'll have an install media.
Now, to address the other part of your question, the good news is that chances are it's not infected with spyware or viruses or anything like that, because that's not very prevalent.
Although if it was a really knowledgeable Mac user, they definitely could have installed, you know, some kind of, like, keylogging or phone home.
Did you buy it from a friend, or did you buy it on eBay, or did you buy it on Craigslist? Where'd you get it?
I bought it on Craigslist.
Craigslist, okay. So chances are, more than likely, it was somebody just looking to offload old technology. And they probably didn't install anything nefarious on there, because it would have been a lot easier to do that in a Windows-style computer rather than doing it with a Mac or something. That being said, if you have the opportunity or the ability to get a hold of an operating system disk, the really good thing about a Mac is that once you have the install media, it will just install, and it sets up all the drivers and everything you need to be able to use that Mac. You don't have to go chasing down, like if you had bought a used Dell, you don't have to find a Dell-specific operating system disk or
That's
driver
disk. That's great to know. I have encountered that with my PCs.
Right.
In the past, where, like, my HP restore disk doesn't work on a Dell, and my Dell doesn't work on a whatever. So any
universal
Mac OS Snow Leopard installation would be sufficient?
Well, if you go and find some media somewhere, it may not. Because when they burned media, it was sometimes specific to
a particular model?
Yeah, it was. Like, I've got some Snow Leopard installation media that's for Xservs.
But if you find installation media that's just Snow Leopard, it's not an OEM.
Retail package,
if you
find
the retail Snow Leopard, it's installable on any.
You won't need specific drivers or anything for this computer.
They control the hardware, so
yeah, all of that's included in the operating system.
But Jay should probably tell you what you need to make sure and do before you boot and install the media, so that you make sure you actually get a clean install.
Yes. When you do install it, there's a process that you have to go through to make sure you erase the disk and reinstall it.
Yeah, just make sure you go, when you boot it into the CD, before you do the install, go into disk utility up at the top and erase the drive and reformat the partitions. Because otherwise, when it boots and goes to do the install, it will see that there was already a previous version installed, and what it will do is overlay all of the OS pieces,
but leave everything else
that was there. So it's not actually a clean bare install unless you do disk utility to erase the and format the partition.
Okay.
Yeah, but I would just look for an Apple version of the Mac OS that computer will run Snow Leopard or whatever, and find that disk.
But you should be able to find it on the Apple Store.
So, that's great. If I actually get a hold of an installable DMG file, does it come with product code license numbers or anything like that? Or
no, you shouldn't ask for it.
Apple,
yeah.
I don't remember Snow Leopard asked for that. Snow Leopard server have license IDs, but I don't know that Snow Leopard, like, client version did have IDs.
Let's see, most current version of Snow Leopard.
It's like 10.6.
It looks like Snow Leopard can be purchased at the Apple Store for $20.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry about licensing or anything. Once you got the Snow Leopard disk from Apple, it probably won't even ask you for it. But if it does, it will come included.
The other thing you can do instead of burning a DVD is you can actually take a USB thumb drive and actually write a make it a bootable thumb drive, and you can actually load the OS off the thumb drive. And if you have one and you can do that, I recommend it because it's way faster. Because I've had always burned DVDs until this last time for 10.7 and 10.8, and I actually made bootable thumb drives, and the installs were much faster.
Well, I don't know that they offer Snow Leopard in a digital form. It looks like it's a disc form.
Really? Through the Apple Store?
Yeah. But it's worth looking into, but regardless, I mean, I would say, you know, get yourself the operating system disc. If you go to the Apple Store, look, see if they have a digital version of it that you can download and make your own bootable flash drive. You can go on the internet and there's step-by-step instructions on a number of different websites that talk about making a bootable flash drive for the Mac and putting the operating system files on there so you can install it if you want to go that route. But if you want to keep it simple rather than overcomplicating this, go to the Apple Store, buy the Snow Leopard disk. It's $20. Install it on your computer. Use the proper procedure so that you wipe the drive clean and you don't have to worry about anything.
I understand. Thanks very much, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. I'm looking on here to see if they offer a digital download, and I'm not seeing it.
Okay. I thought they did, but...
They might, but, I mean, you might be able to do it through the App Store, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
I think you can. That was one of the first
versions you could. I thought Snow Leopard was on the App Store.
Okay. Yeah, I just found it on their website where you could actually buy the disc.
Oh, yeah.
The thing you want to be careful for if you go to the App Store is that you don't get... I don't know if they make it... If they qualify it as an upgrade... I guess they probably don't.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Some of them earlier ones they did, and it was an upgrade versus a a clean install.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Do we have open line? Do we have anybody in the queue, Roofhouse?
Nobody in the queue. Open lines, 713-526-5738.
Looking on the App Store now to see if Snow Leopard is a download. And doesn't look like it. I'm not seeing it at any rate. It's showing other stuff that says have the words snow and leopard in it, but they're all poets.
Huh.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. It's been kind of a weird night. I guess it's all that Christmas stuff. It's Carl and Suzanne being here from Amsterdam. It's just...
It's a field effect.
Our circadian... our cicada rhythms are... What are you doing, Inflicted? Were you chatting on IRC or something?
No.
No?
When?
You just turned your back to us.
No, I potted down the mic. I was putting it back up.
Pot mic. Okay, got it.
Does anyone have any end-of-the-world plans?
Whew.
I think I got to work that day.
Oh, call in.
Well, my boss told me that it's still a regular work day, but we could wear jeans.
You should be able to wear shorts.
I think it's a Real Estate Hawaiian Shirt Fridays.
Or skorts.
Skorts?
Yeah. Oh.
Aztec loincloths.
I just had a horrible, horrible afflicted vision, and I don't want to. Damn it.
I didn't say I said you. Why were you imagining
Why
me?
Why are you imagining me in skorts?
It is the end of the world.
Well, this could be the last show ever, just so you know. So if you want to call in and be on the last episode, it's definitely the last episode of Technology Bites before the end of the world, whether or not it happens. It's the end of the Mayan calendar. It's the last one. This is the last show of this particular long count.
There's actually a problem known to the priest programmers of the time. It's called the Y-52 Jaguar problem. But they figured they'd have plenty of time to sort it out.
Sadly, no.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Sounds to me, or looks to me, or seems to me that you have got us a call.
I was able to get us a call, and we've got a call on hold.
All right, let's take that call.
All right, so up next on the show, we're going to speak with Jason, who's got a question about AppleCare.
Jason, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I was just listening to you giving somebody else some advice about their older Mac, and it got me wondering... I've got a refurbished MacBook. It's the last model that they made before they switched over just to the Air or the MacBook Pro. And I've had it for almost a year, so I bought it through the Apple Store, and it was covered for a year of AppleCare. And I'm running out of time before I can upgrade to the next 2 years of AppleCare, and I just was wondering what you thought as far as, like, if that's a really good value or what you would recommend or if you had any experience with that sort of stuff.
Well, I've heard all kinds of stories about AppleCare, and in the event that you need it, it's great to have it. It's just, you know, it's a gamble.
Most of the time, to me, most stories I hear about Apple and the way they deal with their products is sort of like higher end places like Bose or BMW or something like that. Like, they're not cheap products, but when you go in for work, they tend to be
very
not question you a lot and not be mean, and they tend to just trade out or you know.
I've heard of people with an iMac that have, you know, had AppleCare and dropped, you know, fell off the desk and smashed the screen, and they got a new iMac.
Or even something newer, that's what I've heard. I don't know if those are edge cases, but I've heard of rumblings of people, you know, ruining one machine and getting something slightly more, faster, because they don't make the one that they broke anymore.
Right, well, if it goes bad or breaks down in such a way that it has to be completely replaced, you don't get the same one, they'll give you the newest version. They'll give you a cash value replacement. So it's a good deal if you need it.
Well, yeah, because I used it once just a couple of weeks ago. Like, I had a display issue where there was just this really light red line that was come horizontal line on the screen, and they completely replaced it, and it didn't cost me a dime. That was pretty good. But I'm usually skeptical of extended warranties. But
I'm the same way, but I'll tell you this. On my iMac, I wish that I had gotten it.
Okay.
Because my screen has started to kind of discolor on one side, and it's out of warranty. And if I had the AppleCare, I could get it replaced.
All right,
but
I think I'm going to go for it because I've got a couple more weeks.
I don't think it's a matter of, you know, will your computer go bad or not? Because a lot of times these Macs will just keep running and running, just like any other computer.
Gone through a year without something happening, so probably the hardware is good. Because if something was really wrong with it, it probably would have cropped up in the first year.
Well, he said, just a couple of weeks ago he did. And the question is, can you see yourself being on this machine, this speed of machine, in 2 years? Are you going to have the machine for 2 years?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. The other thing for me is that if it's a laptop, I'm more likely to buy it than if it's a desktop. Because a desktop, it just sits there. And so as long as the hardware works for a year, I figure it's probably going to be good long term. But with a laptop, you're picking it up, you're moving it around, you might be dropping it even if it's short distances. You're opening and closing the hinge on the case. I mean, there's a lot more stuff going on with a laptop where you might, in two more years of wear and tear, do something that could still be considered warranty work.
That's a good point, because with a laptop, as you're moving it around, it's getting, you know, jostled and so forth. The warranty could come into stronger play. But if the desktop keeps working.
However, end of the world is not included.
I think it's considered an act of God. They had that clause in there.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. I think I pretty much was thinking the same thing. I just kind of wanted to get an expert's opinion on the issue as well.
I'm glad you came to us even when you couldn't find that. Have a good evening. Right. Merry Christmas.
All right. Same to you. Bye.
Thanks. All right. So,
I forgot to turn the bed music back on, so.
Falling down the job.
Yeah.
You got one more call?
Yes, we do.
All right, Groovehouse, who's up?
All right, up next and possibly last on the show and probably...
Forever.
Yeah.
Last computer problem solved.
It's going to be Danny with a question about Apple TV.
Danny. Hi.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, hi, guys. My question was about Apple TV. I know it's like a set-top box that you can watch movies on. Like Netflix and all that, or your content that you buy off of iTunes.
Are you talking about one that you already have, or buying a used one, or do you mean
I want to buy a new one. My question is,
okay,
are you able to install apps on it like you can on an iPad or an iPhone or whatever?
No.
No. Not
no.
No.
It's not designed that way. It's not like it's a dedicated type of device. Like,
yeah, if you want
like a Roku.
If you want app installs, there's some other devices that I think will do that. But the Apple TV, the current version, which is the second or third gen, still doesn't have that capability. But it does have a Netflix app built in, which the previous ones did not.
Okay. Cool.
Roku's are pretty cheap.
What other units does allow
installation of apps?
There's a thing called Roku. It's R-O-K-U. And they have what are called channels. You can go out to the channel store, and they're mostly all free. And you can, you know, install whatever you want. So there's a Netflix channel. You can watch Hulu content. You can watch Amazon content. You can do a whole bunch of stuff like that. And there are a lot of dedicated channels, too.
There's also the Boxy Box, which... Mm-hmm. Which is, you can download that software and install it yourself. XMDB, I think, and Boxy rides on top of it. But they've actually built a box that they pre-sell, like already configured hardware that you don't have to put it together yourself.
You can also get an Xbox. You can play video games, stream movies, and install certain kinds of apps.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of gaming consoles have capability to download stuff and do Netflix and other stuff.
So which out of all these boxes you guys recommend?
I've got a couple of Rokus. That's my favorite.
I have a couple of Roku. Apple TVs. I have an old-gen Apple TV that's got a, like, 40-gig hard drive in it, and then I've got a new one that I just bought a couple of months ago.
So if your internet connection has issues ever, probably Apple TV might be better because it actually downloads it to the unit and then caches it. And
although
then
the new units don't have as much memory.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the old units had a hard drive. The new units only have, like, 8 or 16 gig of flash memory.
They can still cache it a little bit. Roku's purely streaming, to where if it can't keep up, you'll see some stutter. You'll see it'll degrade video performance first. So it'll get kind of grainy and kind of, you know, lo-fi. But if your internet connection can't keep up, you'll definitely notice.
Okay. And then what about, like, Apple TV? I heard you can actually jailbreak it. Is that true?
The old ones, yes, you could. I did that, and I actually installed Boxy on it and did some other stuff with it. But the new ones, I don't know if you can, and I don't know if there would be much purpose to it.
They would actually have to be in jail on the new ones.
Oh, I don't want that.
Call the prison show. Yeah, they can give you some advice on that.
Well, you guys have a great night. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good night.
All right. 713.
Uh-uh. Oh, we only got about 2 more minutes?
Not even.
Not even.
We're done.
Are we out?
Here, we're out. All right, Merry Christmas, happy end of the world, or Merry Christmas if the end of the world doesn't actually happen.
Right.
You know, and don't max out your credit cards just yet.
Oops.
Maybe get... Oops, he says. All right.
Maybe treat yourself a little bit.
Well, you know, maybe tomorrow. Get on Amazon, or you can put some things in your shopping cart tonight. And, you know, if you start to see things light up in the sky, or maybe feel a little trembling.
They won't deliver that fast. I just say get everything. Make sure it's got a really good return policy.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Peter Hughes.
He's Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We may or may not see you ever again. Ever.
So,
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Goody-oops.
December, KPFT asks people just like you listening at home, work, or in your cars to make secure online contributions at kpft.org. When we first tried the simple one-minute campaign last year, you helped KPFT to the tune of $27,000. This year, we want to beat that number, but we really need your help. We're putting 2012 to bed, and KPFT could really use your help to surpass our total from the previous year. Visit kpft.org to donate right now as the clock ticks down. Your pledge online will mean a great deal. This is your community radio station, 90.1 KPFT, Houston. This is the time of year when we think about giving. We take time to appreciate family and friends who make our lives happier and richer. Now is a good time to think about giving back. KPFT has been here for you all year with programming you've come to depend on. We've informed you, entertained you, and hopefully made your year happier and richer as a result. This is week 3 of our quiet campaign where we ask you to please give back with your donation. No loud requests, no demanding sales pitches, just us reminding you that your radio station could really use your support. Contribute at kpft.org. This programming is only made possible through the contributions of people like you. Can you help? Visit kpft.org to support the programming you love. This is Pacifica Radio 90.1 KPFT Houston. Find us online at kpft.org. ¶¶